My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you guys for having me back again and get to share again. I think we got about 6-7 weeks of this if we survive it. But I'm grateful to be here. For me, it's a treat to be able to not only tell a story from a podium, I get to ask to do that a lot, but get to talk about what went on behind the scenes to get here. And very often I say these talks are not something I invented on the way over here in the car and did some quick brushing up and got to talk on step 6 or 7 or 8. But really, it's a reflection of the work that I get to do since the last talk. It's a reflection of where I've been since the last year. And so although the story is the story, and sometimes God gives you different things to talk about your story, but the story is the story. But what I always listen to when I'm sitting out there and what God provides me with is the willingness to have new experiences with this work and with God, and so that those talks change. If you listen to my third step from 10 years ago, and now it probably sounds like two different people, as it ought to. The mechanics and the methodology is the same. It's the big book. The prescription is the prescription. We don't change that. But the experiences and how we evolve should change if we're growing understanding and effectiveness. And I always get excited to be able to share with others about that and have passion for this. And we ought to be excited for Alcoholics Anonymous and excited about this power called God and the great things he or she or it gets to do for us. And very often we are in the business of service. We serve, we serve, we serve. My whole life is service, professionally and privately. It's what I do. And I came to the realization about a year ago, going through the steps again, and my movement back into my religious community, how although I serve, and I think I'm bowing before my God to be of service to him, this power is always serving me. It's unbelievable. The bigger we are like in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more service we do. We want to find out who the leaders are, see who's chopping wood and carrying water at the meeting. And here's this great, omnipotent, all love, no opposite power, who's of maximum service to me. That makes absolutely no sense to a thinking mind, but it makes perfect sense to anyone on the spiritual path, who's ever last shall be first. And we know when we're serving in Alcoholics Anonymous how much we're right in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I get to do these things, usually folks are interested in the book of coming. And when I get to do conferences and things like that, usually folks are there because they're looking for something. And we get to stand. I get to stand right in the middle of all of that. So I'm very grateful to share. I had a thought. I was driving over Marion. I just kind of kept it to myself. Why, I don't know, but I did. But I had a thought with this pouring rain in this time of year. God separated me from alcohol on June 23rd, 1988. I've said a million times from these podiums I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I'm grateful for that. June 23rd, 1988. This time of the year, April, May, June 1988, I was in serious trouble. And with this pouring rain, I remember one particular evening, I was homeless, and I was panhandling in lower Manhattan, and I was at the foot of the Manhattan Bridge on the Canal Street side. And it had to be about 1, 2, 3 in the morning, whatever it was. And it was teeming like this. And I had been in the same clothes for a while. And I had no money. And I'm standing by the foot of the Manhattan Bridge trying to flag down cars, hoping they'd stop and throw a buck or two out the window for me. What lunatic is going to do that when this lunatic is standing there, right? And it's not exactly the safest area. And there I was. And I remember there was some construction going on, and it was on the highways, they have construction ahead, and they have these big arrows, and this arrow was just flashing at me, just pointing at me, like, beware of me, you know. And I remember this one particular night, I somehow hustled up about $5-$10 to get a pint, and the liquor stores were closed, so I learned about the bootleggers and the projects, and we used to go in there and get, and Lori remembers those, we used to go into the projects and get a jug. But I remember going into the projects when I was done, and I was soaking wet. I was cold. I was underweight. I hadn't eaten in a while. I was filthy. And I remember drinking. It was in the washer-dryer rooms that you have in these big buildings. And I remember looking to go into the dryers to steal clothes to keep warm because my clothes were soaked. I had construction boots, and they were waterlogged, and there was no drying them, and just looking to steal dry clothes. But I sat on this little bench in the washer-dryer room, and I'll never forget as long as I live. I remember Because I had this thought as I was doing it, how sick I'd become from the first drunk. And I was it was a pint of brandy, and as it was going down, I was clutching it. My hands were shaking, and every drop had to go in because I couldn't afford to miss one drop. It was that valuable to me. It was the blood that I needed, if you will. And I was sucking on this pint like my life depended upon it. And that went quickly, and I was right back to having to go out there and hustle up money. Before the sun came up, because then people would start going to work and they would see this and the condition I was, and I was always humiliated by that. And by the time June rolled around, I was in worse shape. And I remember riding the subway, which I never paid for. I used to sneak on the subway, shop guy like me sneaking on the subway, and they would radio, you know, somebody just jumped the turnstile. And I was sitting on a train one day, this was all before June 23rd, same clothes, and I had a hoodie on over my head. I hadn't shaved in I don't know how long, and I reeked. And I was sitting on the train, and there was a woman with two of her children, two daughters. And I know they were staring at me. I was just looking at the floor. I would not look up because I knew they were just taking my inventory. And because I was a young guy and it looked like a homeless bum who was out there for years. This is all for the price of a drink, by the way. No one threw me in the street. I come from a good family. You know, my family was middle class, upper middle class. There was no need for me to be homeless. But I worshiped liquor and I despised God. And I'm an alcoholic, and this is the lengths I went to, where my God took me to the very edge of the cliff before I begged and he pulled me back. But I was sitting on this train, and I could not look up, and I could feel the blood rushing to my head, and again, the realization of what my life was turned into. And there was one moment when I did glance up, and the three of them were just staring at me like, what's wrong with this person? And we all know what that feels like when you get an overwhelming sense of humiliation of what I've turned into. And you can have that. We can have that on Park Avenue or like I was on a park bench. And I knew something had to be done. And the only thing I can think of at that time was I just wish I would die. And I'm not giving that lip service. I just wish I would die. And I tried taking my life twice when I was out there in the form of eating a bottle of pills. And God kept interrupting that death. So here I am sitting on this train station, on this train, and I couldn't take it anymore. And yet I still had to feed the monster. Because alcoholism didn't care that I was experiencing humiliation and degradation and I wanted to stop. It is not interested in that. It's interested in killing me, but will settle for me living this life drunk. And so I had to go down to Manhattan and hustle up money and do all the things I had to do, going to the bootleggers in a project, the liquor store. I remember getting to a liquor store and he wouldn't give me credit, my liquor store, and I threw a trash can against his window and cursed him. He was an Asian fellow, and I used every ethnic slur I can think of, not knowing his wife and children lived in the back. In the old days, a lot of people had storefronts. They lived in the back, and his kids came out, and they were terrified by me. Because I turned into an animal in 1988. And I was just recalling that with this pouring rain. And sometimes when it gets close to my anniversary and certain things kind of kick up and you go right back to those days. Now, that won't keep me sober, by the way. That kind of awful pain of losing the family and winding up the way I was on the streets alone. And I spoke to basically no one. I would go into the liquor store, ask for a pint. And that's basically the only conversation I had. Hide out in the hallway, hide out in an abandoned building, wherever I could. I was scared to death. I walked with impending doom. I knew it was a matter of time I was going to get arrested because I'd been arrested in a while. Or the people that I was kind of around were dangerous people, and I was going to get hurt. I was going to get stabbed or shot. I was going to get mixed up with something, or I was going to be successful in killing myself. So I was walking with this impending doom, and still that won't keep me sober. Circumstances will get us to a place of asking for help, but circumstances won't keep us sober. So sometimes we tell new people, keep it green. That won't work. Circumstances will make me willing to ask for help. And if someone showed up that particular day outside the liquor store, on the train station, or when I was standing by the Manhattan Bridge, says, I can help you, I don't know if I would have asked for help. I may have. Because there was still a little bit more of a bottom that I had to experience. I had an experience outside the Port Authority. same clothes, a couple of weeks removed from the train station, and I had a moment of clarity where I cursed God because I knew what I had turned into, and I felt like I was one of those hopeless drunks. I was going to die in the street. That won't keep me sober. It just brought me. It was a case building that God was doing to get me to a place of, okay, I'm done. But God knew what I was made of and kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing until I says, I'm done. And I meant it with every fiber of my being. June 23rd, 1988, guys, if I live to be 100, that day may be the most honest I will ever be in my entire life. June 23rd, 1988, because there were no bargaining chips. And the plea to my God was, I don't want to die. And with that was, I couldn't take living this way anymore. I couldn't do it. I was beaten. And so when people gave me instructions early on, I didn't like them. When people barked at me, I didn't like it. When they told me, you need to get in the book or else, I didn't like it. When they weren't interested in my feelings, I didn't like it. And when they didn't hug me all the time, I didn't like it. But they were sober. And I just looked at them, and they looked like Joe All-American. How do you look like this? I mean, that's where I was at. They used to take me to a Three Legacies meeting. 300 people on a Friday night, everyone dressed. They greet us at the door with a suit and tie. I mean, they didn't just show up looking like they're going to commit a felony when the meeting was over. They respected AA. They got to the podium dressed, men and women. And that's what I could identify with. This guy looks great. How do I look like that? How do I get a shirt and tie? How do you do this? I see men with watches. I love wearing a watch. Not for jewelry, because when I was new and I saw men with watches, they looked like they had it together. They wore a watch. Men with manicures, I says, how do you do that? I'm in the gutter. How do you get there? And you would hear their story, and I would see them looking impeccable. Dressed for a podium, watch, manicure, wedding ring. I respect my loved one. Men wear wedding rings and don't hide them. How do I get there? And they just said one word, God. I said, okay, great. How do I get God? Because I don't have too many good feelings for this guy called God that you're worshiping. And they would tell me, God doesn't care you're angry with him. He's all love and no opposite. Okay, so what do I do? And then what they did for me to show me how God operates, they would take me to the diner. I was living in Minnesota. I had no money. I was living in a halfway house. There was no money. You know, the counselor said, stop enabling. Don't you love that word? No, I want to say enable me. Keep enabling me, right? So no money was coming from home. Every once in a while, my dad would get an okay from a counselor to send some money. So I'd have some things to buy for myself, little personal items. But there was no money. And these folks knew it. And they would say, come with us, hop in the car. And they'd take me back to the halfway house. And they would take me to this diner in a place called Edina. The town was called Edina, Minnesota. And Cottage Grove and all these little towns out there. But after the Friday night meeting, everyone would go and everyone looked good. And some of them came from work and they were just great. And I looked great and I looked like I was in a halfway house for counting days. And I knew it and I was humiliated by that. Not once did they make me feel cheap. You're with us. And he's having a cheeseburger. He's having pancakes. They would order for me. And they wouldn't even spend time on it. They'd get right back to whatever they were talking about. So I didn't have to feel, oh my God, they're ordering for me. I didn't even know how to write out a check. I remember a couple of folks took me to a bank. When I finally started a little account in sobriety, a couple of folks took me to a bank and showed me how to do that and how to fill out a check because I didn't know how to fill out a check. I couldn't believe I could put my name on this thing and the bank was going to trust me that there was money in it. I know how to steal your checkbook. That I can do. So it's things like this. And God has given me this every year. And I wasn't even planning on talking about this. I'd be quite frank. But here it is. And this time of year, almost 25 years I'm sober now. When it gets around this time of year, this comes back. And it comes back with much gratitude for being a member of this sacred fellowship. And if anyone knows me, I treat this fellowship sacred because it is. And I get very annoyed, almost zero tolerance, when people trash my AA. Right? When we take it for granted and we're here for the wrong reasons, like a date, you know, or to talk about other things other than alcohol. because this is my home. This is my sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And we've been around here a little while. We know the sacredness of the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'll lay out some here to Vegas. Most of us are not supposed to be sitting here. I'm supposed to be ripping the town up, or people are supposed to be seeing us in another institution or throwing flowers on our gravesite. But here we are. Go figure. How's that happen? It makes absolutely no sense. The spiritual path makes no sense. But in God's world and in the spiritual life, it makes perfect sense how we get reborn and resurrected by this power called God. And so God flipped me from a person who despised this power and let everyone know how much I despised this God. And I would quickly tell you how much I hated God with venom, with ugly language, because God did bad things to me, has brought me to a place of loving my God and having passion for my God and trying to do God's work, a life of service. That makes no sense to my ego. That makes no sense to my mind. In fact, my ego and mind don't even want me talking about this. Don't talk about that. It's not good to talk about it. Because when I talk about God, the ego dies. When I talk about God, the mind shuts up. And it doesn't want that. It's signing its own suicide note. And the more we talk about God, and the more God we got, the less self is involved. And that's a great thing. And I've said from the millennials podiums, I wish, my prayer is that every one of us lose our mind. Right? Lose your mind. You don't need it. It's where all the trouble starts, is in the thinking mind. My mind, I was sitting there, and I'm just getting still, and this comes to me, and when God moves me, I get moved. And my mind said, don't talk about that. Get right into the step, but I can't deny my power. God pushes, and I go. So I'm like, I get real grateful, and sometimes it gets a little emotional for me the closer I get to June. And when I approach June 23rd, because I take a coin at a meeting not to show the group, oh, look at me with my, you know, so many years, and I'm just a wonderful human being. Don't you all love me? You know? And I don't turn my coin time into an Academy Award speech either. I'm up there for one reason, give thanks to God, AA, and maybe someone's new sitting there like I did would say, maybe I can do this, which is really the purpose of a coin, huh? And to celebrate an anniversary. So I just, it's a treat for me to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. The dialogue with my dad for years now has been like it never was before. Yeah. And relationships with my family have improved immensely. We're buds. We show our vulnerability, it cracks in the armor, but we're a family. We go through the thunderbolts that families go through, but Pete Marinelli's not hiding out in some closet anymore. And I know I'm starting to get well when I'm able to talk to my family about the cracks in my armor, because when you're new, you want to present this person who's flawless now. I got 30 days sober, I am flawless, and I've seen God. Right? And that's the way it goes at the beginning. That's all guilt, we're trying to hide guilt. But after a while, you say, hey, man, this is me, you know. I sleep at night knowing that during that day I didn't hurt anybody. I don't hurt anybody. Yeah. And if I do unintentionally, I will quickly fix it up. That's a God life. So I'm grateful to my God for what he's done for me and continues to do to me by removing me. My journey has been one of removal. Nothing's been added. I've gotten a lot of education. I have great teachers. My lineage goes back to Dr. Bob, thank God. Right? But what has happened is just a complete removal over and over. God keeps chiseling stuff away the more I surrender to and go through this work. And what's left is what's left for every one of us, spirit, perfection in our brokenness. And the more we wake up instead of being sound asleep in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more of that perfection we experience and we're able to walk through life. We get moved through life. We get moved through life rather than driven through life by a thinking mind and fear. This is a great way to live. It's been called the greatest spiritual movement of our time, huh? I wonder why. Now, I don't know everyone's story, but I'll take a good bet. I think I'm playing with house money that a lot of us are not supposed to be even alive, let alone in an institution. I know James's story. James is not supposed to be sitting here chairing a meeting. I know a lot of stories, and I don't know all of them, but a lot of us in here are not supposed to be sitting here, you know, Who can I be of service to rather than who can I rip off? It's God. And I'm grateful to my God. And so I go worship God in my prayer time 3 times a day. I go worship God in my religious services. And I worship God by doing this, because that's what this is about. Whether I'm telling you mechanics from the big book or I'm sharing a story with you, it all goes back. It all trickles back to a loving God and how he shows mercy on every one of us, every one of his children, regardless of the screw-ups we've all screwed up. And God says, don't worry about it. Just come home. Just come home. And every day my God sets out a banquet for me. Am I going to eat? And then we get to a place where we're grateful when even there's no food in the belly and no money in the pocket, because we walk with our Creator and everything is good. And we get a sense of no longer of impending doom. We just get a sense that I'm going to be okay. Somehow I'm going to get through this. I'm going to be okay. And it's in those places that we experience an abundance of God, because we're not thinking, we're surrendering to God. When it hits the fan, we have nowhere to go. We surrender to God and there's a sense of I'm going to be okay. And we feel closer to God in those times than sometimes we have a pocket full of money and the belly's full. Everything gets removed. We can experience that with double-digit sobriety. We can experience that counting days, as long as we're not in the way, as long as I'm not in the way. And I've gotten in my own way a bunch of times in 25 years. A bunch of times I've gotten in my own way when I thought I could run the show and I thought I was good to go. But good sponsorship took my legs out from under me and says, remember where you come from and go worship God and go be of service to someone instead of being wrapped up in your own nonsense. And they were ruthless with me, and I adore them today for doing that. They didn't say, how do you feel today? Let's process your feelings. You come from a dysfunctional family, you know. You know, they just kind of like smarten up and go do the work we tell you to do. Thank the good Lord for that. There was a gentleman, his name was, he's passed on, and he won't mind if I use his name because I used it when he was alive. Jerry Ford, like the ex-president. And when I was in treatment, I hated him. He was a military guy, the military haircut, dressed perfect every time, and I hated people like that because I was still in the grip. 1988, I was looking for these people. This guy would come into work, and no matter what I said to him, he would go to the big book and God. I said, what is with this guy? Get a life. Right? He was sober like 30 years at the time. 1988, go back to South Oaks Hospital. The first guy I looked for was Jerry Ford because I knew what he walked with, and he would give me the truth. So the people who taught me were bulldogs. They were mad dogs with the book. They died sober, the way I hope to also. We get, in Alcoholics Anonymous, tremendous amount of power. God's power, not my power. We get a tremendous amount of power. We're no longer powerless in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's contemporary AA. It's middle-of-the-road stuff that we stay sick. We'll always be sick. We'll always think about a drink. We're always going to be in bondage. This is it. And yet there's no God in that equation. What we get as self dies and we move through this work and we start to approach step 9, we start to experience the abundance of God's power necessary to go out and make amends, necessary to grow in understanding and effectiveness, necessary to get to a place where we can say that we're recovered drunks, not recovering, not still sick and suffering, but recovered, not cured, but recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and all the isms that accompany this fatal illness, this terminal disease that we suffer from. And with that God's power that we get just by grace, just by being a child of God and going through the steps and taking stock of self, looking at defects in 6 and 7, we land on step 8. And this is where rubber hits the road again. Welcome to the NFL. Am I ready to go out there and make right the harms I've caused? The same way I sat down with a pen and paper after prayer and took stock of my life and the inner workings of me and how I fell short and how much harm I caused and how full of venom and resentment and hate and fear I was. Now, my ego would not allow me to see that. My ego kept saying, you're good, it's their fault. Now, I got track marks from here to Philadelphia. My liver's banged up to no end from too much liquor. I had a million things wrong with me on the inside from alcoholism. And my ego says, you're all right. Don't worry about it. Have a drink. We'll figure it out tomorrow. So the ego wants no part of this, but we start to look at self in 4, and we get to 8, and we see our life run on self-will by the list we create out of 4 and some new names that we will put on this 8-step list. And so I went back through my 4th step and saw all the harms that I caused to others. Institutions, even principles. How do you make amends to a principle like children should be seen and not heard? Real men don't cry. Do the right thing. I despise things like that. How do I make amends to that? By loving the people who said it, understanding what their intent was to help me, understanding what they were coming, where they were coming from. And when someone else would say to me, I didn't have to despise or loathe them for saying it. It's all they knew. Principles. How do I make amends to principles? God will take me to it and through it, and with careful guidance from a sponsor, I'll be able to make amends and fix the harms I've caused. This is great power God gives us, because only with God's power can we do this. How do we go face an employer that we've been embezzling from, knowing there might be jail time? How do we do that? We're people who run and hide. I don't care how tough we are. At some point, we look to run and hide. Now we're showing up, suiting up and showing up. But it comes with the preparation I found for myself in step 8. And I took a look at all the harms caused in step 8, and I made a list. I made a master list. I got a notepad and pen. And my sponsor told me, all my sponsors, but Mark Eggs told me, give your work dignity. Get a notepad and pen. When you were cutting up cocaine, you made sure everything was nice and clean. Right? Don't even breathe on my table. Right? Right. When you went to the bar and drink, you made sure the pinky ring everyone saw, you got to look good, right? Now I'm writing something that's going to save my life. Give it some dignity, right? So I got a notepad, and after prayer, I start to go through my 4th step, and I made a list of people that I've harmed. Just made a list, Joe, Frank, Bill, whatever it was, all these people I've harmed. And I had this master list, and my job in step 8 was after the list, remember, because it tells us in steps 8 and 9, about the willingness to go to any lengths to find the spiritual experience. They tell us that in step 3, and they tell us that in step 8 and 9 about willingness to go to any lengths, because here it is again. Now, step 8 is not telling me to go make amends. It's just my preparation for it. And so I took a list of the first time through this work, I had made over 200 direct face-to-face amends. Now, it wasn't because I was, you know, Jesse James. I just harmed a lot of people. And good sponsorship had me look at things very clearly. The people I ripped off by saying I'll be there at 2 and never showed up. The people I says I'll be there and I ruined the party. The people I showed up to a housewarming party or a Thanksgiving when I wasn't even invited and came in, you know, hey, I'm here. And they went on and on and on, and the former employers and things like that. So I had this list, and the first time through, over 200 direct amends, and I don't know how many what I call indirect amends. What an order, I can't go through it. And God says, I give you the power, let's go. This is about doing God's work. We stay sober. It's vital to go make amends. The folks who, I've seen this for years, folks who don't complete their outstanding amends that we know we could be making, that we're consciously aware of, that we don't make, have problems in 10 and 11, start to have problems on the path of sobriety. We're stuck somewhere. We know how to make amends. We have a sponsor. We have all the information in front of us, but we're not completing the amends that we could be making, that we're consciously aware of, and we start to get stuck. Thinking another meeting's going to fix it, another workshop's going to fix it. The only thing's going to fix it, I need to go back to step 1 and revisit step 1 and get some willingness to go out there and do God's work and make it right. And then somehow, bang, we take off again. Because we generate a tremendous amount of power in 1 through 9 to take us into 10, 11 and go work with others in 12, which is all about service. But how could I be of service to someone if I'm still dragged back by voices from the past? How could I be present and mindful to where I am if I'm still interpreting right now with things from the past that are still unresolved? I'm still listening with yesterday's ears. I'm not hearing clearly. And the more amends I make, the more amends I found myself making, I wasn't consciously aware of, oh, I'm present, but somehow I found myself very present to where I was, and the past was only used when it could be of benefit to someone else. I wasn't living there anymore. And for someone like me, that's a huge piece of freedom, because all I did was walk with guilt and remorse and fear about the future. And suddenly, I was like, well, that's then, and tomorrow will take care of itself. Right now, I'm here. It was the groundwork that God had laid for freedom. And sometimes we forget about amends. Or we hear even worse, people talk about, here's my amends, I'm not drinking. What? We can get locked up and not drink. That's not an amends. Amends is about knocking on a door, writing a letter, or if I can't make a direct approach, make an indirect amends and put back to the universe what I ripped off. This is God's word. And somehow we get free because of that. There's no mathematical formula that says make amends here and you get free there. It's a whole spiritual thing. At some point, we will get to a place of walking through the archway, entering the world of the spirit. And the past is the past. Biggest screw up in the world. Okay, great. I don't need to be bogged down with that. But if I'm 12-stepping someone or taking someone to the work or doing something like this, I can pull on that to present a picture to you. So you say, okay, I got that. Because I felt the same way. How'd you get out? Okay, this is how I got out. So I have this list, and my job was to pray for the willingness to make amends to every single person on that list. That include pimps, drug dealers, gangsters, hookers, family members, friends, you name, whoever was on that list. I had to become willing to become to make amends to every single person on that list, every one. And if I wasn't willing, I had to go to God and pray for willingness, willing to be willing. Because I can't get off of that unless I'm not willing. And there was some I was, okay, I'll go there. And then I balked at some of them. The only, when I would balk, it would be because of what's going to happen to me. So it was all about me stuff. Well, I'll look bad. And our book tells us we may lose our reputation. So what? It's usually a reputation I created for me anyway. I'm not that important. Right? My ego's gotten in the way. What about consequences of going to jail? What about she may leave me? Well, where's God in any of that? Because the Father, my God is the one who's leading me down this path. Not going to take me into danger, not going to take me into harm's way, but has a road of perfection paved for me. I'm going to walk or not. Rubber hits the road again. And so we sit with the sponsor. What do you think about this? Step 9 will tell me, Peter, do not go and make this direct amends because of X, Y, and Z reasons. But we can go behind the scenes and make an indirect amends. But in step 8, I had to become willing to make amends to them all. And there came an amends on there. I've shared this story a lot of times. And our book mentions about how to approach the man we hated will arise. Or the woman. A lot of us have that person. Because we still are thinking what they did to me. And this landlord who was on this list, I was renting a little studio apartment from this guy in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, and my dad paid the rent. My dad furnished it. I just moved in. I did nothing except screw it up because I was in the grip of alcoholism, and I despised this man. I despised him because he wanted rent at the first of the month. I said, what do you mean? It's me. Right? And so I would sneak in through the back window. He would call my dad. Now, I'm in my 20s, and he's calling my dad to pay my rent. I think of it now. I want to, like, give me a crack, you know. I would borrow money from the guy. He would give it to me. It got so bad, I knocked on his door, and he opened the door. He said, what do you want? I says, can I borrow 20 bucks or something? I never forget this. He slid it under the door. He didn't want to open the door to me. Almost burned the place down, like the Bowery I basically brought in there. But why I despised this man was he had a wife. He had a little daughter. His wife was pregnant with one on the way. He was working and going to school. He had his house, he had his wife, he had the kids, he had the dream. And he was, you can see, he was like, I remember while I was there, he had purchased a brand new car. I remember sitting in the driveway. He was on his way. I despised him for that. And my bedroom window, my bed was right next to this window, and which faced the backyard. And every once in a while, on a Sunday afternoon, they would have these little family get-togethers, and I would hear them laughing and the glasses clinking and the, you know, just having fun. And if I was home, I'd come to like 2-3 in the afternoon, your head's on sideways, and I says, how dare they laugh? I hated them. because I wanted to be that. I knew this was not going to happen. I would take stock of this little studio apartment. How messy could a studio get? It looked like the Bowery. It looked like a crack house or a shooting gallery. It was disastrous. And my bed had no pillowcases and no comfort and no sheets. It was bloodstained and soiled. It was a mess. And there were Blackberry brandy bottles all over and garbage. And it looked just awful. How do I get like this guy? And I hated him. So I'm looking at this. And he threw me out. And so he's on my list. And I'm going, I'm not going because he threw me out. He cursed me. He hollered at me. He banged on a door one time. He called me some ugly language one day. The whole place was about to burn down. It was because of me. I passed out with stuff in the oven. So I hated him. It got so bad in this place right before I got thrown out. The place was bare. It was days or weeks, a couple of weeks maybe before I got thrown out. I remember finding a box of spaghetti in the top cabinet, and next to it was a box of Domino sugar cubes. And I would take a handful of spaghetti, break them in half, put them in a pocket, and a handful of sugar cubes, put them in the next pocket, and I would eat that, chew on hot spaghetti and Domino sugar cubes, and that's how I would exist. And I wound up getting thrown out. I hated this guy. He had the problem, not me. And so what I had to do was pray for willingness to go make amends to this man, eight-step work. And if that didn't do it, go back to step one and see my lack of power over the next drink. And if I didn't become willing to make amends to this man, there was a drink waiting for me somewhere. And I was on thin ice. My ego says, you're fine. I wouldn't make amends to him either. But God gave me enough to say, Father, please, show me what I need to do to make amends to this man, even though I despise him. Well, my sponsor says, you need to write some more inventory. There was an incident where I saw this guy in a restaurant. I had to leave the restaurant. I was not free. And I did some more inventory and a whole lot of prayer on willingness to forgive this man. And one morning I woke up on a Sunday morning and I got dressed pretty much like I am now. A shirt, sport jacket, and slacks. And I wasn't going to church. I was going to this guy's house. Because I was taught when you're going to go make amends and you have an appointment, you go look like the best example of this big book you can be, because they may be the only copy to ever read. I may be the only copy I ever read. And I had a chunk of money because I owed him back rent. And off I went and I made this amends, which we'll talk about when we get to step nine. But it was the most electrifying experience I ever had. How to approach the man we hated will arise. So I kept praying for willingness to see these people. And as the willingness was fed to me, and some of them I was very willing to go to, I start going out and make amends. Now, one of them, my willingness, was to go see my dad. I owe this man everything. God works through people. It isn't only people in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's people, a parent, a child, policeman, whoever. And if it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that my God gave my dad, you'd have a different speaker here. And I was very willing to go see this man because I wanted to make right for the first time. I was always insecure about this guy, around this guy. My dad's like a man's man, that alpha male guy, the football coach, the drill sergeant, the gangster. I mean, he feared nothing, and I was always falling short. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no more skeletons in the closet, and I was kind of getting me back, if you will. And I was walking with my head up and shoulders square, like my dad always told me, no matter what, head up, shoulders square. I was starting to feel that, and I wanted to go show him how well I'm doing. My sponsor says, no, you can't go yet. You need to walk this. You need to walk this. You need to walk this. You need to live this, because he's heard a billion I'm sorries. You need to let your walk prove how well you're doing. They're not interested in the sermon. They're not interested in I'm sorry. They just want to see you walk this, so go walk it. Because what you're doing speaks so loud, I can't hear a word you're saying. And so I started walking the walk. And there was no other way to walk. I was so sick and banged up when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you would think they dropped me off in kindergarten and I started life all over again. So when I started walking this walk, I was 28, 29 years old, this was a new life. I couldn't be dishonest. I couldn't go sideways. This was it. And so I'd show up for work on time, and I'd leave when they told me. I didn't borrow money from anyone, and I had money left over from last week's paycheck. I would bathe twice a day and eat three times a day and go to a meeting at night. And I start to look the part, and I wasn't cursing, but I was worshiping God all the time, going to AA, and people start to talk about that. And the word got back, news travels, and word got back to my dad that he's here all the time. He's working hard. And then came the day when it was time to go make amends. The ground was fertile. And it's God's time, because God's time is perfect. My time is never perfect. And I saw counsel with the teacher, my sponsor, and the ground was fertile for growth to happen. And that's the day I approached my dad. And I didn't even finish the amends because he didn't want to hear it. All he wanted was a son back. And all the walking I was doing was convincing enough for him. The same thing with my two younger brothers who caught me at my worst. I ripped my brothers off. Money, jewelry, my word meant nothing to them. I caused them humiliation and embarrassment all the time. And I was the older brother that they looked up to. I protected them growing up. That's how we were taught. I did what I had to do to take care of my brothers. And they became embarrassed of their older brother. How do you fix this one? Well, go walk to walk. And God gives us tremendous amount of power where we become the black sheep in the family, and we may even get to a point of being the point person in the family. And so little by slowly, my brother started to talk to me. Not only just, hey, what's going on, but talk to me about stuff, about my mom's passing, about dad, just about stuff. And AA taught me how to listen, just listen. And so I started to show up when there was a party. I would show up sober. Oh, my God. And leave sober. How's that? And sometimes I would tell my family, I'm going to be a little bit late because I have home group tonight. And they would say, go. We'll drive you. Don't worry about it. And so I was able to sit with my brothers and kept praying for willingness, 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 willingness. I used 8 with 9. Just keep going to God for the willingness to make amends to them all. There were some people on that list that I wanted to go see, and I couldn't go see, like old relationships, because I wanted to show Mary how great I was now, and I'm really not that dirtbag that you went out with. But I couldn't go because it was going to cause more harm. And as the past started to be put in the past, I was able to move forward, and relationships changed in my life. They got better. Finances started to change. I moved out of being a longshoreman, and I found myself quickly in the treatment center industry, something I never planned on. God says, enough here, I need you somewhere else where you can be of great service for me. But it came through the making of amends. In fact, while I was making amends and I was a longshoreman on the waterfront, no one had addiction or alcoholism in their family. It didn't exist. Until I came forward and suddenly everyone had it. And they would do things like, can you take my son, my daughter, my niece, my nephew to that AA place you go to? Can you take them for the cure? And things like that. And suddenly I was a spokesman for AA, you know. And the wreckage of my past was cleaned up. I was even able to make amends to an ex-wife a bunch of years ago. I married a woman, and she was one of us, completely untreated and didn't want help, and the marriage blew up. And I was crushed by what she did to me. But because of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, I called her one time and made amends for whatever I did wrong, because it was about me cleaning my side of the street up, and was able to place her in 3 treatment centers to which she AMA'd. I don't know where she is now. But that is put to bed now. And so my relationships change, my finances change, my jobs change, my relationship with God changes. And somehow we get to a place where we're not looking for anything anymore. We're just looking to be of service. I found myself not looking for anything from anyone. I was totally okay, finally, in my own skin. I would come home from work on a Friday and not leave until Monday. People would call that isolating. I was in my glory in my own apartment, clean and sober, member of AA, reading, meditating, practicing fasting, practicing silence, not wanting anything, and I get a trip out to Washington, and God puts an angel in my life. (Clears throat) that based on my track record, I don't deserve someone like this in my life, but she walks with me now. Go figure. And all I have to do is honor that gift. In 1988, I couldn't even tie my own shoelaces. But somehow, making amends, things get right. And so the same God who despised God, I love being around my God. Because I see him in you when I go to AA meetings. I see it in new people begging for help. I see the old timers who walk the walk and still call me kid when they see me. I got to spend time with my great-grandsponsor, Gary B. from Indiana. He was sponsored by Paul Martin, who was sponsored by Dr. Bob. And he sponsors a guy named Bob O. The two of them together sober like 10,000 years. It's unbelievable. And, you know, they still call me kid when I saw them in Kentucky for a conference. And how's my, you know, my great-grandsponsor get thrilled to see me walking in and gives me a hug of gratitude to see me. I'm schmuck kid from Brooklyn with 25 years sober. He's got about 40-something years, almost 50 years sober. But that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I see God in that. In God's time, I made an amends recently. From the time I was, I'll say around 17, 18, 19, right around there, I hadn't seen this person all these years. And I got in touch with her and made amends to her. It was the first love kind of thing. And her family adored me. My dad loved her family. They were good people, salt of the earth. And I blew that up. And they didn't know what happened to me. And the first thing she said to me, "We thought you were dead. What happened to you?" And I was able to fix that. And out of that, she didn't know what alcoholism is. I described it to her, what I went through, what I was experiencing, and what I do now. And she knows nothing about AA or alcoholism. But as I describe what alcoholism is, she says, "You need to talk to my husband." And she described his behavior. He's one of us. He's so unbelievably rich that money is the buffer right now. He owns everything, basically. You know, has a fleet of cars. It's he's sick money. So that's the buffer, but he's alcoholic. And I says, "I'd love to help him if I could." Which happens sometimes when we make amends. You make amends here and something else happens there. And he never called. But I was able to make amends to this woman, 17. I'm going to be 54, so do the math. I mean, it's a long time. I've had amends take 17 years to make because God said the ground's not fertile in my time. My job, some of the spiritual work is to do nothing. A lot of times we think in spiritual work, I got to do something, got to do, give me something to write, got to read, got to do something. Sometimes do nothing. Let God set the table for once. There's a woman I study. I love this story. Her name is Gangaji. And she goes to her teacher and she says, I'm spinning around in my head. What do I have to do to get still? He says, "Stop doing everything." She says, "I know that, but what do I have to do?" Right? Which is what we do. Just be still and know that I am God, as it says. Because it's in the silence and the present moment when we just get with breath that we get to experience God. And the more amends I clean up, the more present I become. The voices of the past are not driving me, but God's voice is moving me in the direction he needs. And I'm clear, so I can hear. And I can hear it in you, and I can hear it in you, and I can pay attention to others. I say, "Well, there's God, my AA." What a great way to live. That's all I got. Peace.
You guys have that?